If you got the reading and if you looked it over, you'll notice something. Jetsun Kapa, in his commentary on Naropa Six Yogas, he seems to want to make a point right away that you need certain kinds of preparation to study the Six Yogas. So, you know, we could delve right into Tummo or the yoga asanas, or we could start some pranayama if we had tissue papers. And you could do that, and it wouldn't work, okay? Now, they call it, how do you call it? When you make milk or cream, churning sand to get cream. You know, like, you can try, but it won't happen, you see? And there are certain kinds of preparation you need. And Jetsun Kapa, he seems obviously to be reacting to somebody, and I don't know who it was in his time, but apparently people had come across books by Pamodupa, who designed he finalized the asana practice, right? And in there, in his books, which we have the original text that Pamodupa used, he does not go into the preparation. He jumps right into the yoga. And so Jetsun Kapa is obviously reacting to somebody who said, well, Pamodupa didn't have any preparation. He just jumped into the asanas. So why can't we, you see? And then Jetsun Kapa tries to lead his readers through a logical process where he says, you need some kind of preparation. You need all kinds of preparation to do the six yogas. And then he starts to quote famous masters of the Kagyu lineage, you see. He quotes first Marpa, and then he quotes Milarepa, and then he quotes Gampopa. So he's like really calling out the big guns to prove that you need certain kinds of preparation, which is called Tummo Lamjang. Tummo Lamjang means you need to soften your heart with certain teachings before you can succeed in a physical yoga practice, you see? You need to prepare your mind in special ways. And Tummo Lamjang means like Lam Rim. If you know the idea of Lam Rim, steps of the path to enlightenment. There are steps which are open, and they're called shared steps. Shared means tantric teachings, and then what we call perfection of wisdom teachings, which means normal open teachings. These share a certain foundation. So the path which is shared, called Tummo Lamjang, means you need this preparation. You have to study the Lam Rim steps from the beginning before you can jump into the asanas. You need to prepare your heart, or it won't work, okay? And we're not going to go on too long tonight. It's late, and we started late. And I just wanted to sort of present to you a little bit of that path, okay? What I would consider things that you need to know before you should do the yogas of Naropa, right? These are, and Jetsun Kapa quotes passages in which Marpa refused to teach people the six yogas until they had practiced Lam Rim. And then Marpa used to quote an old tantra by Lord Buddha himself saying, people need certain preparation. Then he quotes Milarepa. And Milarepa says, the two yaks are joined at the neck. If one falls off the cliff, the other one falls also. Meaning, if a teacher or a lama grants you higher teachings, like Naropa's yoga, without preparing you properly, then the student will fall off the cliff. The student will fail. And very badly. You see, there's two kinds of failure in tantra, okay? The easy one is that you drop into the vajra hells, okay? Like you disrespect your lama or something and you fall to the lowest hell and you stay there for several million years or whatever, okay? The worst one is that you do these long sadhanas every day for your whole life and nothing happens. You know, to me, that would be worse. You see, for someone to hold out the hope of you becoming an angel of light within this life, and then they don't teach you how to do it properly, and then you spend your whole life, you know, reciting some piece of paper over and over, and then nothing happens. To me, that would be more sad than, like, Vajrahal is one thing, you know, but to spend your whole life fruitlessly with no result, that's, to me, that's even more frustrating, you know. So he quotes Milarepa. Milarepa says, and he mentions how Milarepa required people to do going for refuge and learning about bodhicitta, and then learning about bodhisattva activities before Milarepa would allow them to have these six yogas, the six yogas of Naropa. And he talks about Milarepa and he quotes Milarepa, and you can see those. So even Milarepa, also when students came and said, teach me this special kind of yoga, Milarepa said, do you have initiation? And they said, yes. Then he said, okay, I'll teach you, but I also want you to get some other initiations, and gave them a list. And you'll see that in the reading, okay? So that's Milarepa. Gampopa, in his Namtar Gyan, Jewel Ornament of Liberation, he actually sets out the same three broad stages as the Lam Rim, okay? So in this classic Kagyu work, you get the three scopes, or the teachings on the stages of the path for people of three scopes. So this is also set forth by Gampopa, who was Pamodrupa's teacher. So Jetsun Kapa says, don't pull out Pamodrupa's book and tell me he didn't believe in preparation. He assumed that you were ready before you got the book. Okay, he assumed that in the tradition of the Kagyu, Digun Kagyu and other Kagyu at that time, you would get those teachings in advance, or you wouldn't even be getting that book yet. So he doesn't repeat them all in his book, and that doesn't prove that people didn't do them, okay? So that's Jetsun Kapa's pitch for doing Lam Rim first, having certain preparation for your heart first. So what are the preparations? And we can go through them this evening. They boil down to something very simple, and it's what we talked about already. If you're here in this room, if you heard the word Naropa, if you heard the word yoga, if you heard all those words together, Naropa, six yogas, right? If you heard that, it's because you have heard it for thousands of lifetimes, okay? You have heard those yogas for thousands of lifetimes. You have been training in them for thousands of lifetimes, because it's that training which creates those words in my mouth, okay? I'm not here, and I'm not saying anything, okay? Your mind is projecting me. I'm just a result of your own... I'm a shadow. I'm a reflection of your own spirit. And that's how Tantra works. You are creating me through your past seeds. I'm just an expression. So, you know, they tell you this when they teach you about patience, so you don't get angry at other people. Don't get angry at this person who bugs you. You created them. Okay? And that's very common. You heard that. That's Madhyamika. That's emptiness. That's the middle way. Okay? Don't get angry at people who make you upset, because you created them. How? By getting upset. Get it? Break the cycle. Break the cycle now. Just chill out. Then you won't meet irritating people in the future. Right? So they tell you that, but I think they should tell you that when they're talking about the six yogas. Right? I didn't make up the six yogas, and I'm not teaching the six yogas. I'm saying whatever your karma is forcing me to say. Okay? You collected some kind of karma. You studied yoga before for many lifetimes. You went through what you thought was a normal American life. And then suddenly, for some reason, probably because you've been helping people a lot lately, the seed has ripened, and we were forced to come here. You created us to come here, right? So you have those seeds in your mind. You're about to become that person. If you could... Stephen Hawking wrote a book, right? What's it called? A Brief History of the Universe. And we read it in Tree Retreat, right? We contemplated it. And he has a very interesting statement. He says, if the spin on an atom, if the gravitational attraction between proton and neutron was 1/1,000,000,000% different, this world just couldn't happen. You know, the universe couldn't have happened. He says, and that leads us to reflect upon how many universes started and just flopped. You see what I mean? like the spin wasn't quite right. You know, like he says in that book, it's very beautiful. For every universe that worked, there are billions of universes that didn't work, and they just failed. They're just like a car that didn't start, you know? Like this universe got started and then just didn't work. And Buddhism agrees with that. They say that there are countless billions of planets, billions of realms, billions of worlds, even around us, that we can't see. And they're just flops. They don't work. You know? Beings just live there like some kind of idiots or something, in darkness, in the cold. And that's all they ever know. They are born into darkness, like the darkness between stars. Just absolute zero cold. And they just experience that pain for thousands of years, and then they just die. And for every one of us, there are billions of them, you see? You're at the top of the food chain. Like, we have crawled our way up the evolutionary ladder. You see? No, for every person in this room, forget all the creatures in the ocean, forget all the little creatures on the earth, forget all the insects and the birds and the animals. They are also highly evolved. They are also extremely fortunate beings. For every ant crawling across the earth, there are billions of failed souls, billions of failed beings who just born into some dark place and die there over and over, and they don't know anything else. And you are like, you think you're a normal American, right? You think you're just a normal person. And you're not at all. I was translating for Dalai Lama's doctor, Yeshe Dundan, 30 years ago in New York. Nancy Karen's house, first time I met her. Her daughter, who now has her own kids, was in her arms, you know. And he was teaching about cancer. And he said, cancer is caused... Somebody asked him, what are the factors that give you cancer? And I translated, what are the factors that give you cancer? And he said, things you wouldn't even dream of. He said, one of the main causes is the rubber that wears off of tires of automobiles. You know, like when a tire wears down, several pounds of carcinogenic powder go into the atmosphere. And we breathe it all day. And that contributes to cancer. And then every electrical cord that you ever stayed near has an electromagnetic field around it, and that causes cancer. And then every food you ever ate that had any preservatives in it, especially canned, he said, this is cancerous. This causes cancer, you know? And he went through this long list. And then I remember one guy raised his hand. He said, look, Yeshe Dundan, you know, we're just normal people. I'm just a normal person. I live in New York, you know? What am I supposed to do? You know, like, well, if that causes cancer, what can I do? I'm just a normal guy, you know? And I translated, you know? And then he looks at me and he says, well, first of all, I didn't say that's what caused cancer. I said those were factors. You know, so I said, well, what causes cancer? Karma, of course. If you hurt other people, you get cancer. If you don't hurt other people, you can breathe carcinogens all day. Nothing will happen. You see? It's all karma. And then he got mad at me. He said, and another thing, you tell that guy in the audience, he's not a normal person. Because he's not a normal person. He's a high bodhisattva. You know, if you made it to this room, and you made it to this life, and you're listening to something called Six Yogas of Naropa, you're no normal person. He was very angry. He said, tell that guy to stop thinking that way. It's very bad. You know, he can be very fierce if you know him. He's like, tell him it's very bad. Very bad to think you're a normal person. No such thing. If you're in this room, you're very close to reaching ultimate body, rainbow body. You're very close. If you heard the word Jalu, rainbow body, you're extremely close to getting it. You're on the verge of getting it. So you have to go for it. That's the point. In my mind, that's 50% of the whole mundo, right? You've heard mundo, right? Mundo is like preparatory practices. You can't do Naropa six yogas if you haven't done mundra. So what's the big mundra? Well, 50% of it is realize you are one in a billion. More, you are one in a billion billion. You are that close. You're a bullet that was shot a mile away, and it's just touching the paper of the target, you know? You're at that moment. You're about to break through, you know? If you seriously went out of here, studied that book of yoga, got some good instructions on it, your body would change in your lifetime. It would change. So you have to go for it. Like, you're extremely fortunate. You know, you are on the edge. And if you just relax and don't do anything, you're crazy. You're just totally crazy. You're so close. You have worked for thousands upon thousands of lifetimes. You have been through this training. You have been a Geshe thousands of times, you see? You have gone to Tantric College thousands of times. You've been with high yogis like Telopa and Naropa. They have trained you. You're very, very fortunate. You're very, very ready. And you just have to make a little effort and go. So just to think that way, just to keep that in mind, who you really are, what you were really meant to do, that's extremely important. If you have that vision, then you can practice the six yogas. Then you're okay. That's mundra. Okay, that's the mundra. What will you be like? The central channel will open, okay? Bang on the pipes from the outside. You know, loosen these two channels. This one opens, this one opens, this one opens, this one opens. Heart chakra has three knots, three twists around it. It's the hardest one to open. The day that you open it, and you will do it, you see? If you work hard, you can do it. The day that you open it, you can, without opening your eyes, you can look on the face of every living being in this world in one moment. You will see the face of every living animal and human in this planet. In one moment, you will see all their faces. Multiplied times all the billions of planets there are. In the moment that you open this chakra. And that's what heart yoga is all about. That's why we named it heart yoga. The idea is that all the exercises are aimed at opening this particular chakra. When this chakra opens, it opens for maybe 2 or 3 minutes, okay, first time. When it opens the first time, for 2 or 3 minutes, you see the face of every living creature. And that's your normal condition. Okay? You are built, you were created with this ability. Everybody in this room has this natural ability to see all the beings that live in the whole universe at a single moment. You were born with that ability. Then the knot tightened, you see? Then the knot tightened, and you lost it. It's there in abeyance, right? It's there. If you can open it slightly, God's sake, use any chinang tablets or that. Outer, inner method, doesn't matter, okay? Okay, bang those pipes. If it helps, do it, you know? Try to loosen it slightly. And then you do this inner practice, meditations, tonglen, thinking about other people while you do your yoga. Then it cracks open. And it's not like you develop something you didn't have. You are opening up something that you already have. You see? You were meant to be like that. You were meant to walk around all day seeing every living creature there is and knowing that you will go to serve them. You see? It's so... How would your life be after you open it? What will you be like after that day? Okay? What if you can see every other being face to face? How would you change? You see, when the central channel opens even slightly, you know that you will take care of them like their mother, like you will be their mother. Billions of creatures at the same moment, you will take care of them better than their mother, you see? And that's what you were built to do. And you were this close last time, and you died. No, really, okay? You were this close, and you died. And you know, deep down, that's what you really want to do, right? Like, I have all these levels of, what do you call it? Aspiration. Up here is aspiration for ice cream tonight. Now, and then aspiration for pizza. And then aspiration for hot chocolate, you know? And then there's the aspirations, you know, physical aspirations, right? I should be famous. I should write another book. People should be happy with me. You know, other aspirations. And then down much deeper, everybody has this aspiration to save the world, right? Why is Frodo the most popular guy in America? You know, is it because he's like the most handsome or tall or no, you know, his feet have the right hair on them? You know, no. Why do we resonate with Lord of the Rings? Why did they come out with 3 movies at once? You see what I mean? We were in 3-year retreat. We had to make up. We've been watching every movie made the last 3 years, you know? It's a hard job, but we can do it. And you sit back and you say, why did this become like such a popular movie or Matrix, right? Like, what is it? That it's because you are going to save the world. You are going to be Frodo. That's why you like to watch those movies. You know, deep down inside, that's why you love those movies. That's why they keep making them. That's why they keep writing novels like that, where the guy or the girl saves the world. That's what you really want to do, and you know it. Like, a lot of memory got wiped out when you died last time. No, like, it's like when a computer crashes and the document gets, what do you call it? You lose the document, but you don't lose Microsoft Word, although you'd like to, right? So it's still there, right? And that desire you still have. It's the deepest human desire. People can tell you you're selfish. People can tell you you shouldn't like ice cream so much. You know, people can tell you you're grumpy half the day, and that's true. But you got this other deep down desire built in. Part of manufacturer's warranty. Since you were made, you have this complex to save the world, you know? And that's what the yogas are for. The 6 yogas of Naropa are to allow you to save the world, okay? And you gotta connect with that. You gotta connect. That's Mundo, okay? There are other Mundos. There are 100,000 mandala offerings, 100,000 prostrations, 100,000 mantras, practices like that. Those are called lower tantra, frankly. Okay? Are they bad to do? No, they're not bad to do. Are they good to do? Yes, they're good to do. Should you do them? If you have time, it's okay. It is not emphasized by our lineage. Why? There are 4 levels of tantra, and what distinguishes the 3 lower realms from the higher one, when you get to the higher level of tantra, your mundos are internal. Your preliminaries are not physical objects that you move around. They are thoughts that you master. They are attitudes that you develop in such a way that you can never lose them again. You see what I mean? And those are the real preliminaries. And the biggest one is what we just talked about. You will be this being. You will go to countless worlds and save countless planets, whole planets of people. You weren't meant to just hang out in one body and help your family or your friends. You see? That's good. That's nice. But if you could be on a billion planets right now and help them, I mean, come on. You know? And you were meant for that. You were built for that. You have that capacity. If the heart chakra wasn't blocked, you would be there. You would be doing it right now. Okay? So the yoga is meant to open that. What's the other preliminary? Then Christy's going to do. There's one big one that I'm not going to do. She's going to work on that one. Okay. You want to go now or later? Later. Later. You finish. Okay. One big preliminary. Okay. Who's got a chew toy that I could borrow? Just throw it. One. Yeah. I'm going to give you this one back because you might need it. Okay, ready? Okay. I'm going to do this. You heard this 1,000 times. I can't come into town without doing this, okay? It's an obsession I have. Okay. What is this thing? Maybe there's somebody in the back that didn't hear it before. What is this thing? Pen. What? A bone, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you say pen, and even if you said bone, I mean, you just know the punchline. But your mind says pen. My mind says pen. I don't know what your mind, but... And then if a dog came in here and I waved it at them, I use a pen because you have to touch a pen every day, and please try to remember every time you touch a pen, okay? If a dog came in here and I waved it in front of them, then they would come up and take it in their mouth, and they would chew on it, right? And so there's two realities going on with this pen. You see what I mean? There's actually two realms, parallel universes, happening in this church at the same moment. There's an animal realm going on, and there's a human realm going on. So the animal is in the animal realm by virtue of thinking of this as something to chew on, right? That's what makes it an animal realm. So that dog has something in their mind that makes them see this as something to chew on, right? Automatically. And then I have something in my mind that makes me immediately see it as a pen. Okay. Which one's right? I'll tell you the story of Gainesville. We're in Gainesville, Florida. I don't know why it was Gainesville, okay? But anyway, there's a guy sitting right there, and he says, the true use of that object is a pen. And then everybody did what? Boo, you know, come on, true use me, come on, right? Which is the true, which is the correct use of this object? Both. I mean, it just depends who you are, right? It just depends. There is no true. Get it? There is no true. That's the biggest mundra of all. If you get that one, you can pull off anything. You can pull off anything. I stood here last night. I stood up for 100 nights in a row and told people, you know, we built a $150 million company from nothing to help the refugees, the Tibetans, right? How? Just this pen thing. Just get it, and you can use it, right? I fixed the bone in my foot. I was crippled. I couldn't walk on it. I went into retreat. I couldn't walk, okay? There were days I couldn't come to the other person's tent in the first few weeks of retreat. The last dinner I had before three retreat, I couldn't walk to the restaurant. I was like limping. And then I just used the yoga. I used the pen thing. And I fixed it, right? And then, you know, if you're lonely or you don't have good friends or like that, you just use the pen thing. And then you're just surrounded by the most sweet, beautiful, compassionate, sensitive, intelligent, warm, loving, giving people all day long. You know? Like, it's too many, actually. You know, like you can't answer your emails for 4 months. You know? No. So if you're one of those, don't worry. But anyway, no, it's like you can change everything. Your everything. If you understand the pen thing, it's such a small thing, right? It's just a pen, right? But that's the ultimate mundra. Just to understand the pen. Just to get it. And that, the fact that it's not truly, its true use is a pen, you know? Forget the true, right? There is no true. Get it? To a dog, it's something to chew on. To me, it's a pen. What it truly is doesn't exist. And that's emptiness. That's the emptiness of a pen. And frankly, I don't know. I've never heard it explained properly. Okay? I mean, that's all. That's emptiness. All this stuff about, all this other stuff, you go home like with a headache. I throw up when I hear those things. Ask him. No. I get sick. I get physically sick. I hear this wrong explanation of it, and I actually throw up. You see? It's so bad. It's so wrong. It's very simple, and you can use it for anything. You see? It's not really a pen by itself. And it's not really something to chew on by itself. It's whatever my mind is seeing, is what it is. oh, it's just mental, so it's an illusion. And then Jetsun Kapa says, yeah, it's an illusion, but you can use it, right? It's illusory. It's not what I thought it was. It's not a pen by itself. It's true my mind is making it, but that doesn't make it less functional, you see? I always say, if you think this is illusory, and if you think that means it doesn't work, come up here and let me give you a Saddam Hussein mustache, you know, with this illusory pen. And I've never had one person come up. Like, you could be the first tonight, if you want. You know, of course it works. Of course you can use it to write a letter, right? You can use this thing to write an explanation of why it's not this thing. Get it? Right? Right? No, it works, right? So, okay, my mind is forcing me to see it as a pen. It's just a perception. It's just my perception. But is it voluntary? Right? Could I just see this as a diamond stick and go run to the jewelry store tomorrow and sell it? You know? Could I just... This is the old idea of prayer that you grew up with. Prayer works. Prayer is extremely powerful. The people who pray in this church, they're doing something... If they understood how to do it, it would work. But the prayer where you just close your eyes and you wish, oh, please, Auntie, don't be sick, you know. Oh, please, take care of my mom who's got breast cancer, you know. Oh, please, make this into a diamond stick. Help me win the lottery, God. You see? Then you open your eyes, and it's still just a pen. Right? Right? No, I mean, that's not... It is a perception, just my perception. But that doesn't mean I can just close my eyes and wish it was something else, right? So where's the perception coming from? Why do I see it as a pen? I have some kind of seed in my mind. I have some kind of seed in my mind. And then you talk about karma, and then you teach people karma, you know? You want this to be diamond? You can make it diamond. Oh, woof, woof, it can't be diamond. Oh, woof, woof, it can't be a pen, right? No, you ask a dog, could this be a pen? No, it's something to chew on. Then I say to you, this could be a bar of diamond. No, it's a pen. It's true. It's true, use is a pen, you know. It's just like the dog. Woof, woof. Well, you should be chewing on that, you know. No, I mean, and then you talk to humans, and they're so much like dogs sometimes. This could be a diamond stick. No, no, it's a pen. It's only a pen. No, get it. There's different levels, right? There's dogs who think it can't be a pen. And there's humans that think it can't be a diamond stick. There's humans that think you can't make $150 million like that. There's humans that think you can't cure your body of any disease like that. You know? It doesn't come from its own side. If it came from its own side, yeah, you're right. You can't fix your body. You can't use this for anything. It's not true. But since it doesn't come from its own side, all things are possible. All things are possible. You can make anything happen to any object because this thing and this thing are different, right? Whatever applies to this thing applies to this thing. What is this, a paw? No, its true use is a hand. It's truly made of flesh and blood and bone. That's just your perception. That's just your perception. When people start to tell you, true, true, like wave this thing in front of their face, you know. You could see it as something else. What? I don't know. What's step number 3 of Naropa 6 yogas? Yeah, rainbow body. Okay, get it? No, that's, why is that a preliminary? Why is that a mundro? Why am I mentioning all this as a preliminary before we get into this sexy yoga stuff? You see? No, why? Because you've got to understand how it's possible. That's the ultimate mundo, right? If you really grasped that this applies to this, then you're going to work your butt off to get a change your body. Okay? Then it's like, yeah, it's possible. People come up to me all day long. It's disgusting. It's so boring. I don't do my meditation. I'm not keeping my vows. I don't even know what my vows are. You know? And I'm like, don't tell me. I don't want to know. You know? You're not serious. You didn't do the preliminaries. You see? Yeah, you can't do yoga. Yeah, you can't meditate. Yeah, you didn't change your body. Yeah, you didn't fix your foot. Why? You didn't do the preliminaries. What's the preliminaries? First of all, never lose sight of the fact that you're about to become the savior of countless beings, okay? No, you're very close. By the way, I'll cover one objection right away, okay? How can we all save the world at the same time? I mean, there's only so many billions of planets. If each one of us is going to cover every planet, then isn't there some kind of, what do you call it, job redundancy there? You see what I mean? No. Okay? No, okay? The universe is like that. All the billions of worlds are like that. You will save them. Okay? I will be your student. You see? Get it? And when I save my billions of worlds, you'll be my student. Thanks. You see? No problem. No problem at all. Okay? That's all. So that happens. It does happen. You are the next Jesus and you will do it on countless planets. Okay? Whether you wanted to or you thought you were going to, it doesn't matter. Okay? You have the seed. And it's blocked. And that's what heart yoga is for. That's what the six yogas are for. Bang on the pipe from the outside. You know? Move the prana from the inside with your thoughts. Okay? And you can do it. Okay? You were meant to do it, and that's why yoga is so popular in this country. 20 million people are meant to do that. Immediately. Okay? So, those are the two preliminaries. Those are the two real windows. What? They call the first one bodhicitta. It got so worn out, I didn't use the word once, did I? Right? You gotta have that vision. You are meant to be the next savior. The next Frodo. Not really, okay? The next Neo. Everybody saw Neo, right? You saw the Neo thing. You're meant to be the next Neo. Don't forget it. Keep it in mind, okay? All day long. People are waiting for you. People are counting on you. Don't make them wait. Don't make them go to the dentist again. You know what I mean? No, I mean, if we got our act together, we could clear things up really fast. You know, we could serve people really fast on many, many worlds at the same time. Don't make them wait anymore. Second thing, you must. It's a tantric vow. Like I already told you one tantric vow, so I'm probably already in trouble. I'll tell you another one. Okay? Dong Yi Gong, a root tantric vow. You must think about the pen thing every single day. Must. Okay? That's a preliminary. Mundo. That's the real mundo. You are required, when you take a tantric initiation, to think about emptiness every single day. Something about this pen means that you will be the Jesus for countless beings, you know? Something about this means that you must do that. You see what I mean? And you gotta keep that in mind. You gotta work for that, okay? And the six yogas is a really, really beautiful, easy place to slide into it, okay? Even just the physical exercises. You don't have to do the Tibetan ones. There's like 20 kinds of yoga out in the world right now. They are all connected to an authentic lineage. Check out like 5 places. One of them will be for you. 4 of them won't. Okay? You'll pass out at Bikrams. And the Ashtanga people, you come home with a bent neck or something, you know? Or whatever. Don't get discouraged. Keep going to different ones. We snuck into some around here. They were pretty nice. Pacific Cultural Center and stuff like that. And keep going until you find the one that fits you, okay? And don't try to kill yourself. You know, find the one that's at your level. If you fall asleep, it's not your level. And if you come home with your neck like that, it's not your level, right? And then use the inner methods in that book. Practice the six yogas of Naropa while you're doing it. It's a very good place to start. You were supposed to do that. That's part of the game plan. The cosmic game plan is why they set up all these yoga centers and stuff around here. Okay? It was not an accident. People are waiting for you to show up. Okay? They came for you, to train you. You see? Oh, not just me. Yeah, just you. Okay? All right? Yeah, really. Okay? So get on the stick. Or the pen, I don't know. Anyway, Christy Lau's going to do a little bit, and then we'll finish, okay? She's going to speak about perhaps the most important preliminary, which I didn't mention, okay?
So I get to speak about the first preliminary. Which is, it's the very first preliminary listed in either sutra or tantra. And some people are, they're already smiling because they know what it is, and they figured out that I'm only talking about one thing this weekend. So, the very first preliminary is you have to find a lama and you have to rely on them. Even for the open teachings, that's the very first step. You know, like it says in Yuntin Shirgyurma, if I can remember, Yuntin Kungi Shirgyur Drinchen Che, the source of all my good is my kind Lama, my Lord. Sushin Tempa Lamgi Tsawaru. Taking myself to him in the proper way is the root of this path. Right? So we're going to talk about why the Lama is the root of the path. First of all, why we need a Lama? Why can't we do it by ourselves? Well, even for the sutra teachings, it's really interesting. We don't even really know most of the things that make us a Buddhist directly. Like, most of us, if we haven't attained a really high level of realization, don't know directly that Buddhas actually exist. And we don't know directly that the laws of cause and effect of karma really work. And we don't know directly that emptiness is true. We have been relying on authoritative sources for this information. And we have based our entire life upon it. And we've become Buddhists. We call ourselves Buddhists because of this. But the whole basis of our belief system is based on what we called Yiche Jepak earlier today. It's belief, logical belief, based on an authoritative source. There are many authoritative sources. You know, I mean, you could say, well, I could just get this information from a book, and that could be good enough for me. I mean, you could, right? I mean, you have read Buddhist books, and they do have this information, and you can trust them, and there are other kinds of authoritative sources out there, like you rely on news programs to tell you about the satellite they sent to Mars, and you don't go up there to Mars and check it out yourself, but you believe that they did it. You know, you see the pictures and you trust them. But the Lama has to be more than that for us in order to succeed in this path. The Lama has to be someone that we go to for help because we realize that we can't do it by ourselves. We have to come to this understanding that we can't control our own mind. I mean, if anyone has really, really tried to keep their vows and really, really tried, maybe even for just an hour, to be completely happy and not think one negative thought, we can't do it. Not even for, you know, 10 minutes. There's always some little small thing there if you really watch your mind. You know, we're not in control of our mind. We're not in control of our thoughts. And every time we have another negative thought, it plants a seed in our mind for us to keep having them. So we're in this horrible cycle. We're in this horrible downward spiral, as it is, you know, in our minds and in our lives. And we need someone to come and shake us out of it. Thanks, Lily. We need someone outside of ourselves because we're way too complacent, you know? Even if we could see everything that we needed to do to fix our own minds, which we can't, we're somehow blinded to our own faults. But even if we could see them, we're so damn lazy that we won't even do it, you know? We're so comfortable in this tiny little bubble fraction of time that we have that's made it enjoyable for us to live here. You know, we don't realize it's so fleeting. We don't even think about it, and we get lazy. You know, we get caught up in life, everyday life as we know it. And we let unimportant things get in the way. And the Lama is the key for us to be rescued from that. To be rescued from that mundane view, that everyday of life that traps us so much. Why do they call him the root of the path? That has to do with how karma ripens. There are certain ways in which karma can ripen quicker and certain ways which karma can ripen more powerfully. And this is important to us. We have to find the quickest and most powerful ways for karma to ripen because we could be planting good seeds in our mind, but if we don't know how to make them ripen quickly, like say for example, you're planting seeds to have enough leisure time to do your practice. If you don't know how to make them ripen for you quickly, by the time that they ripen, say in God knows what lifetime, you could have forgotten all about practice and it would be totally useless, you know? And then we have such a little amount of time in this life that we could be spending time on karmas doing things that aren't as powerful, and we could be putting out a lot of effort for a very little return. And we want to make it the opposite. We want to make it, you know, a small amount of effort, very big return. And that's possible if you know what's called a powerful object, something called a powerful karmic object. And there are several kinds of powerful objects. Like this is the person or thing that you do an action towards because they're a powerful object. The karmic result comes to you faster and it comes to you much bigger than whatever you put out there to begin with. And one of these karmic objects, a very classic one is your mom and your dad because they've cared for you your whole life, although that's a big deal. It's because they gave you this precious human body. They made your precious human body, and this is the only kind of body that you can use to get enlightened, to turn into light. It doesn't work in any of the other realms. It's only this human body. So they're a very powerful karmic object. And then people who have done great kindnesses for you, if you do something for them, that's a very powerful karmic object. So that also most of the time includes our parents. For most of us, you know, because they raised us for 20 years. So that's like double on them, you know. And then people who are in a lot of pain or a lot of need, a lot of suffering, they're very powerful karmic objects. So if you're, for example, I know people are doing hospice projects here, and that's a very powerful karma. You know, that's a very good way to spend your time. But the most powerful karmic object that is just 1,000 times more powerful than anyone else is the Lama. And this is because somewhere deep in our subconscious, we can realize that this being is the key to us getting enlightened. So as soon as you take a lama, it's like, you know, that person changes for you overnight from just a normal object to this incredibly powerful karmic object. And this is the reason why Tantra can work in one lifetime, is you use this powerful karmic object of your lama. You do good karma towards them, and you experience results maybe in a month or 6 months. It doesn't take long. And the more purely you are able to see the lama, the faster the karma ripens and the more powerful it is. So if, like we talked about before, you were Jetsun Kapa and you saw your lama as Vajradhara, you could have a really fast turnaround and a really powerful result. I mean, we're talking a matter of days, maybe. So how do you find a lama like this that you can use to really, they call it Bok Jimba in Tibetan. It's like when a rocket goes up in the sky and then they turn on the afterburners and then it just shoots up. That's what Bok Jimba is. It's like dumping a bunch of gasoline onto an already lit flame. So how do you Bok Jimba with your lama? You know, how do you find this being, this precious, priceless being that you can work your tantric magic with? Strangely, the very karma of getting a lama to come to you, it's so simple. It's to sincerely ask for them to come. That means you really have to put away a lot of pride in thinking that you can really do it yourself, or that means that you would be willing to put yourself in an uncomfortable position or sacrifice something that you enjoyed doing in order to be with your lama or something like that. But you make a sincere request in your heart for this lama to come to you. And they must come, because that's the law of cause and effect. It's scientific. It's like gravity. You know the cause. You know what result must come. And the lama, you know, the lama that comes to you, they might not necessarily be in robes, or they could be. And they might not necessarily be male or female, and they might not necessarily even be Buddhist. But if you ask for them sincerely to come, and they will teach you the highest path for you. And eventually we really need to find the one, because a lot of people here, I know, they have a lot of lamas. It's a very popular Dharma place here. You know, you're very lucky in that respect. But you really need to come to a conclusion about your spiritual path. You need to find your root lama. You need to find the one person that you trust more than anybody else in the world with your spiritual well-being. You need to find the person that you could just lay your heart at their feet. You need to find the person that you give your life up for, that you would be willing to die for. And it's a serious commitment. And I'm not telling anybody to jump into it lightly. I personally, I was mulling over this question for like a year after I thought that I had found my root lama, whether I wanted to actually make the jump, you know? Because it's not like American marriage. It's a lifetime and beyond lifetime commitment, and you can't give it up once you take it. It's very, very serious. But that very seriousness is why it works so strongly. And once you do take a root lama, the results are astounding. I mean, things could literally happen for you overnight. You know, the day that you take one. It's a very powerful thing, but it has to do with you. It has everything to do with you. I mean, even checking out the lama is really checking out yourself to see if you would be able to maintain that view of this person under any circumstance. It has nothing to do with them. In fact, you know what? You could take anyone as your lama. But it's much easier to take someone that you already see as very, very pure. It's much easier to take the purest incarnation of your reality and work from there. Because if you just take any Joe Schmo off the street, you've got to go much farther with them. But because we are creating them with these practices, anyone could teach us, you know? Anyone could become Vajradhara for us. And one thing that's really important to say, the karma of seeing someone as a holy being, it happens after you take the jump, after you take the leap. So there's a bit of lag time between you committing to this kind of relationship and them actually showing their mystical holy being powers, you know, because you don't get to see them unless you commit. Because the process of committing creates that. It creates them. But it needs to happen. It needs to happen soon, because otherwise you'll waste your time. And there are degrees, you know. You can give like 50% of yourself and you'll get a 50% return. And then you can keep upping the ante, you know. You can keep giving to them more and more, and you'll just keep getting more and more back. You know, that's pretty much how it works in a practical sense. Not many people are brave enough to surrender themselves 100% at the very beginning. But search them out, you know. Search them out and find them. And, you know, if you're not in a place where you're a little bit scared of what's going to happen next because you're sort of living on the edge, like Naropa, if you're not in that place, then you have to find it. You have to find that place because you're not living up to your full potential. You have to find that edge for you where you're pushing yourself with your lama to your maximum potential. And then everything that you want will come to you. That's all. Thank you. Yeah? So we'll do a small dedication. What do you want to do?
Sashi Puki Jukshin Me Tuk Chong Rirap Ne Sangye Shindu Mikte Uwagi Jokhan Namdak Shinda Jupashu Idam Ruradna Mandala Kam Niyatayami Gewati Geokam Sanam Yashe Tsok Sok Shin Sanam Yashe Le Jung Me Dampa Kunyi Dupa